It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday the 4th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Whether people call it the end of the internet as we know it or the continuation of the internet as we know it, we've probably all heard this phrase by now.
Title 2.
Title 2.
You just heard Cisco Systems CEO John Chambers, some Bloomberg TV news anchors, and FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler. They were talking about the Title 2 section of the Communications Act of 1934 that deals with telephone companies and how they're regulated. The act was updated in 1996, and according to reports, the Federal Communications Commission is about to suggest that internet service providers and wireless companies be regulated under Title II. This controversial move would make net neutrality advocates who want all internet data to be delivered at equal speeds pretty happy. It would make FCC regulation opponents unhappy. But what about you and me? Would a Title II internet actually feel different for users? We're going to ask Kevin Werbach. He's Associate Professor of Legal Studies and Business Ethics at UPenn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Is this a preventative move, or would it actually have an immediate impact and effect on the way we get internet now?
The real issue here all along, the one central issue, has always been what's the authority of the FCC? When something comes up, when there is a situation, as has happened, where a broadband company like Comcast is engaged in some blocking or throttling of traffic, or at least someone makes the argument that they are, there's a set of complaint procedures at the FCC, but only if it's a Title II service. And the concern is that the FCC would not be in a good enough place to resolve those cases unless it found that broadband was under Title II. But at the end of the day, nothing immediately changes. We're all talking about when there is inevitably some sort of conflict, how it gets addressed.
What about mobile data?
Back in 2010, when the FCC put into place its previous open internet or net neutrality rules, it made basically a deal with the industry where it said, we're not going to apply them to wireless mobile internet. But what do you think happens to your wireless connection once the signal reaches a tower or a Wi-Fi hotspot? What's out behind that? It's a wire. So the wired internet is still there. And so by all indications, the FCC is going to now go back and say, look, if discrimination's bad, discrimination is bad wherever you do it. And we all know that wireless is the huge growth area and increasingly a central way that people access the internet.
Now, 5 years from now, as a user, how might surfing a Title II internet actually feel different for me?
You're surfing the same internet. The internet is not a Title II internet. And frankly, that's, you know, the whole open internet process has been about keeping the internet more the way it works today, where it's an open platform.
Kevin Werbach is Associate Professor of Legal Studies and Business Ethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Kevin, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for having me.
If you ask a prison guard today what the biggest form of contraband is on the inside, you might be surprised by the answer. A growing number of people who work at correctional facilities in the U.S. won't say weapons or drugs. They'll say cell phones. While the use of cell phones and smartphones has skyrocketed on the outside, the number has jumped behind bars, too. Kevin Roos is writing about this for Fusion's new tech section called Real Future. Kevin, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you for having me.
Why aren't cell phones, laptops, and other connected devices allowed in prisons?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, they can be used for all kinds of things, including harassing victims. There have been some incidents in which people have coordinated further crimes from prison using smuggled cell phones. So prison officials see this as sort of the most dangerous form of contraband to emerge in the last several years.
Give me a sense of the underground marketplace for this stuff.
Well, a lot of it comes in through the guards, actually. Guards can command huge amounts of money for smuggled cell phones, like hundreds or thousands of dollars apiece. And so it's created this kind of underground economy where, you know, one inmate might get a cell phone and then might rent it out for a fee. But they've come in all kinds of ways. I mean, people have shot them out of potato cannons. They've buried them underground. I mean, this is really an interesting challenge for the prison system.
There's a really interesting aspect to your story in that prisoners use it in some ways to just make their prison existence more human.
Exactly. I mean, one of the most fascinating things I found was this guy who makes vines from his prison cell. And then he posts them online and he has a couple hundred followers and people seem to like these vines. But they're just him dancing and talking and sort of trying to communicate. And you can see it. He's sort of doing it to stave off the loneliness of being in prison and just to let people know, hey, I'm okay in here.
What about managed access systems? This is something you talk about in your piece. What are they? How do they work?
It's like a cell tower. It actually sits between the tower of the carrier and the person using the phone. And it intercepts all of the data and voice connections headed to that tower. And it says, you know, are you one of 100 numbers that are allowed to place calls or have data connections from this facility? And if you're not one of those 100 or 200 or 300, then it blocks you. So they're about $1 million a piece to install, but prisons are putting them up just as sort of a last resort to say, we don't want any of this traffic coming. If we can't get the phones themselves out of the prisons, then we'll just try to make them useless.
Kevin Roos is senior editor at Fusion's new tech news section, Real Future. Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've put a link to Kevin's piece at facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.